This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Welcome, everyone, to Redacted. On this show, we help you navigate this crazy clown world. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And tonight, we've got a lot of news to get to. We're going to look at the United States' latest push to, go to war with Iran over what happened in the United States Congress overnight, the legislation that is now in place to give the United States government and President Biden basically unlimited war powers to do whatever he wants and launch an attack against Iran. But it really depends on what they're going to do. Yeah, so we're sending a third carrier group to that region. You know what's coming, so we'll cover that part of the story.
Plus, we're going to talk about the internal fighting inside of Israel, what may be the consequence of the division about the response to Gaza. We're also going to talk about a possibility of Pfizer going bankrupt. Is it because no one's getting the COVID vaccine? Is this the end of the pandemic? It's not necessarily good news for anybody because the mechanism in place that allowed Pfizer to basically do a bait and switch around its vaccine will remain in place. We're going to talk about that as well.
Also, we had the Polish elections. We're going to get an update on what that means for the future of Poland and the EU. And also, where is Justin Trudeau? He's sort of been hiding, keeping quiet while these woke policies and censorship agenda in Canada seems to be moving forward now full steam because we have the cover of what's going on in Israel to protect it. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome in, everyone, on this Tuesday. So glad to have all of you here. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. Please say hello if you're new here. If this is your first time joining us, we are live at 4 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Thursday. So glad to have all of you here. Say new if you are new, and we will welcome you with open arms. By the way, if you do subscribe to the channel during the show, your name will pop up here on the big board, and your big name will pop up here on the big board, so it'll flash
little
up here.
Names little names welcome. Too.
The other day, or yesterday, we got a super chat from God. Oh, we just got MLK.
And MLK.
MLK is here. Thank MLK23 just subscribed. So we had God and we had MLK subscribed to the show. So good to see all of you.
All right. So that's if you subscribe to our YouTube channel. You also can subscribe to our newsletter that comes out every day that this show comes out, Monday through Thursday. It's quite a few hours before the show. So we sort of plan for it to be out in the morning time around East Coast time. And then this show comes in the late afternoon. So you have plenty of news to bookend your day from Redacted. All you have to do, again, it's free, is go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and then verify that we can email you, and you will get this free subscription to our newsletter. It's a great place to keep track of original sources and links, so we will give you the news plus a little bit about our take on it, and then we will link you to original sources because...
And this is what the newsletter looks like.
This is what it looks like there because the mainstream media... They do not link you to sources at all. That is just, it's a dying breed. I don't know if they just don't teach that in journalism school anymore. Do you notice this when you're reading, if you're reading mainstream media, you will see a summary of something saying, oh, the judge, for instance, the judge in the Trump case issued this order. They don't bother to link you to it so that you can read it to yourself. I find that unconscionable. I guess they think that you trust their analysis. You shouldn't do that. You should have original links to these stories.
the links would destroy their narratives.
That's probably true. Yes, that's usually the case. Well, I don't have a narrative. I just want you to be informed and think for yourself. And I always appreciate your comments back. For instance, today we wrote about how the United States Social Security has been downgraded to a C+ by ratings companies around the world. And of course, that's the case because Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. And I happily can defend that. And I enjoyed the emails that came back from a comment such as that. So yes, please do subscribe to the newsletter. It's our favorite way to keep in touch with you.
Redacted.inc. It's not .com. Redacted.inc. All right. Thank you so much for subscribing to the show and the channel. All right.
We're not brother and sister. We're married, just in case you... That we had twice that last night, that question in the chat. And then just now someone said we are siblings. We are not. We're a married couple. We will have been married. Friday is our anniversary. How many years, darling?
45 years. No, I don't know.
13. We'll have been married 13 years on Friday. Our marriage is turning into a teenager, and it's moody.
It is super moody. Actually, this marriage is not moody. We're pretty, it's pretty fine. Pretty good. Pretty
That's
chill.
What you think?
Pretty chill. Our actual teenager is moody. But,
yeah.
But this one. Anyway, all right. So let's talk about that. Oh, by the way, someone in the chat just said, I love how people will post celebrity RIP. They'll put like RIP and they'll name a random celebrity.
It's always Mila Kunis.
I don't think it's always Mila Kunis. It's
every
random.
Time I see it,
every,
Mila
that's
Kunis.
The first time ever someone just put RIP Mila Kunis. And then the other day it was like RIP.
No,
I don't
then
know.
That's the third time. I've seen that three times.
So
same person.
RIP Mila Kunis is not dead.
No.
But I think, well, I don't know why people do that, but I think they, because like everyone in the chat's like, what? Mila Kunis died? So if you guys see RIP somebody, just ignore that.
That's fake news.
That's fake
as
news.
As far as we know.
Mila Kunis is not dead yet. Okay. Well, we just learned that the United States House of Foreign Affairs Committee is also not dead. They just drafted legislation that authorizes President Biden to go to war against Iran. So here we go, guys. This is a neocon's wet dream, of course. They've been wanting this for years. This is exactly what Republicans in Washington have wanted for many, many years. And by proxy, every Democrat wants it too. I mean, there are no anti-war people left in Congress at all. There's no daylight between these two corrupt political parties. Make no mistake about it. Republicans, Democrats, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Maybe the only one who was like actively challenging money to Ukraine was Matt Gaetz. Heck, Jim Jordan was somebody, you know, challenging money to Ukraine. But I mean, they all fall in line eventually, it seems. Maybe Rand Paul. But for the most part, but anyway, this is a neocon's
wet
dream.
Not even Bernie Sanders.
Not
and
even
that
Bernie
is
Sanders,
like
yeah.
The thing we thought we would get from Bernie Sanders because he spoke out about the military industrial.
Oh, the squad?
Conflict.
Yeah, the
right.
Squad. What happened to them?
I thought for sure he would be the one saying, at least let's do some bean counting.
No.
He wants no bean counting.
$33 trillion in debt. So, yeah, let's go to war. That's a good idea. House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Mike McCaul just told CNN that his committee is drafting legislation in the event that it's necessary to authorize U.S. military force if the current conflict between Israel and the 17 factions of Palestinians, you can call it Hamas if you want to. That's how the mainstream media frames it, of course. But if it spills over any further, then the U.S. would use military force if the current conflict between Israel and Palestinians basically broadens into a wider war with Iran. That's the message of this legislation from the U.S. Foreign Affairs Committee. And this gives Biden unlimited power to carry out attacks inside of Iran, using American men and women as sacrificial lambs for their neo-colonial aims. That's exactly what they're doing. Wait, did Biden ask for this power, by the way? Well, interestingly, McCaul danced around this question and wouldn't answer the question when pressed. Actually, here's a transcript of it. McCaul was careful not to say whether the White House had specifically asked for such an authorization, telling reporters, I quote, I don't want to confirm that. It's just that there is concern that, well, we're currently drafting one in the event it's necessary, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't usually mince words or fumble around with his words like Biden does. So when asked on that very question, did Biden even ask for this? Did the president ask for authorization to go to war with Iran? Well, we...
So it's basically like, well, we just got really excited at the prospect.
Yeah, we were like, I just want to get the paperwork ready.
Oh my God, this could be happening.
Just very excited. Let me get the paperwork ready. You'll remember Mike McCall, of course, is the same douchebag, a warmonger that wants an all-out war with Russia. He's the same guy that wanted to send F-16s. He's okay with a nuclear war against Russia. He wanted to send F-16s to Ukraine. So this is the guy itching to launch a war against Iran. By the way, Biden hasn't asked for this authorization to attack Iran, as we said. But Mike McCall wants to be ready just to hand him that slip of paper because he's been itching for this over the past week and says that everything that happened in Israel is all clearly Iran's fault. What evidence do you have? But here he is.
Remember, Iran has financed Hamas. They gave, $150 million to them just last year. They give them the rockets that they fire into Israel. And the idea that they're not complicit with this or have fingerprints is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. Really? So
even though just last week CNN was reporting that U.S. intelligence has not been able to make this direct link yet, but they're going to keep trying.
They're going to keep looking for it. We're going to keep looking for, babies in incubators like world, and weapons of mass destructions in Iraq. What sort of fake intelligence can we drum up? Can we get Colin Powell back from the dead? Can we get Colin Powell to come and hold a little vial up and say that they found out that this whole thing was carried out because of Iran? Cell networks
were the ones. I think there's more evidence pointing to the weapons coming from us.
Right.
Right. We spoke about that yesterday.
I mean, it's hilarious, right? This idea, the notion that we're so upset at Iran may had something to do with Hamas that we would then invade Iran. Can you think about... Just think about the insane logic of this for a second. Mike McCall can. Well, he's thought this out. Listen to what his whole reasoning is on this, specifically about this idea of, well, Iran clearly sent weapons to Hamas. Wait a second. Who the F created Hamas along with Israel? Who the hell funded and created Hamas? We did. Watch this.
This is the nightmare scenario we've always been worried about. Israel, there's no question they're going to go into Gaza. It's their 9/11. They want justice. They're going to go in and take out Hamas, which is like ISIS. I went to that kibbutz where they killed all the little children there and decapitated them. It's going to happen. So then what is Iran going to do? Are they just going to help their proxies like Hezbollah and others? Or are they going to get directly involved in this conflict? Either way, Maria, my committee is charged with war and peace. My committee has the power to declare war or issue an authorized use of military force. We don't want to do that. But if this escalates, that's what worries me the most.
Tell me what you're referring to. Are you saying that the United States will have to get involved?
Well, if we want to stop, say, Israel from obliterating Iran, yes. And that would be a question for the American people. Do we want to get involved to defend Israel? Right now, we're just providing weapons and training. We're not involved. We're not firing our missiles from our destroyer ships in the Mediterranean. But the minute that happens, it does trigger the War Powers Act. And so that's why we have to be so careful here and pray that it does not escalate to that level, because what would follow after that would be very bloody.
It sounds like you expect this escalation to happen.
I think the Hezbollah one will as soon as Israel goes into Gaza. That's the nightmare scenario. I talked about the Situation Room is how can Hezbollah not go in when the narratives come out? Hamas is very good at propaganda, as you've seen, and they're going to blame all this on Israel, even though they drew first blood. They were the ones that went in to this massacre, 9/11 style. It's their fault, not Israel's. But when Israel responds, they get blamed for it. And then Hezbollah gets involved with all their rockets.
Right.
And then if Iran gets in there, then we're talking about issues of war and peace.
Yeah. So my committee is in charge of war and peace. But we love the war part. The peace part, that's not something I really ever bring up on our meeting notes. Yeah. Like when I held our meetings at the War and Peace.
Part ever won?
It's accidental when it happens.
We've decided we're going to have complete peace with Iran. We all talked about it, and we just want everything to be beautiful. Yeah. So we're not going to do anything. We're going to go to the talking table instead.
Yeah. What do you say, Philip?
Am I the only one that caught that he said that like we have to be ready to go to war with Iran to keep Israel from obliterating Iran?
Iran.
Yeah, exactly. I was confused by that too. I'm like, wait, what? I thought you wanted that.
So we need to protect Iran because Israel's going to go to war with Iran and decimate them. We just authorized the War Powers Act for President Biden in case we need to we'll go into Iran. Are you following this?
Well, here's how you protect them is that you obliterate them first,
right?
And then Israel can't do it.
Okay.
And
so it's preemptive.
Protected you from being obliterated by Israel because we did it first.
Go get them first.
I guess.
Right.
I guess maybe it saves the Middle East by like not having Israel to be to blame. But at the same time, that's just a ridiculous notion.
Right.
Well,
right.
No, they don't want Israel to get those rebuilding contracts. They want us to get all the military contracts and war contracts so that they can make the money and not Israel.
Yeah,
right.
When we go in and destabilize Iran and then we have to rebuild it like we do Ukraine, BlackRock and Vanguard need those contracts. They need to be able to go in and secure those $1 billion contracts.
And that's not Clayton being pessimistic. Before our break, we showed you the U.S. State Department's memos saying that they want to remove remove oligarchs. They want to de-oligarchization Ukraine, in order to put private American investments in there. So basically, our oligarchs for your oligarchs is the unintended happy benefit of war in Ukraine. Don't think that template doesn't, sort of replicate itself in other places.
But I love this idea that
our oligarchs believe in democracy, so it's different. Their oligarchs aren't democratic.
Yeah, cool. Jeff Bezos and these guys, exactly. They believe in democracy. So I love this idea. He's giving a pre-authorization. It's like are you pre-approved for a mortgage? He's pre-authorized President Biden with this new war powers legislation to go in and attack Iran, because you know where this is going, right? And they're using Israel basically in this situation as bait. And all the intelligence services suddenly went quiet. They couldn't figure this out, what was about to happen ahead of time. We have a report also overnight, of course, that the Israeli Air Force and Army was put on a seven-hour stand down as this was unfolding. They really knew about this. They were told to stand down. Interesting. Those reports, you can read all about them and study those this afternoon. So very fishy, the timing of all this, getting all of this legislation in place to go to attack Iran. Meanwhile, a short time ago, I had a chance to sit down with Dan Cohen because there is something very concerning happening in Israel, something that the mainstream media is not talking about at all. And it's about Israel and a civil war coming to Israel. Here is my interview with Dan. Is Israel about to descend into a civil war? Not Israelis fighting Palestinians or the 17 factions on the Palestinian side that we've been covering here on the show. No, you know that story. You know that part of the story. What you might not know is Israelis fighting Israelis, a civil war in Israel. Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media, former Washington correspondent for Redacted, is here. And first, before we get into this story, we should point out Dan has had Uncaptured Media, his own media organization, for a number of years and has been building this up. And we're really proud of what Dan has built. He's really launched over the past week because of everything that's been happening in the Middle East. He's an expert on Israel and, of course, the Palestinian conflict. And so we're thrilled to welcome Dan here on the show as the head of his own organization of Uncaptured Media. So I encourage all of you to subscribe to his channel and follow all of the great work that he's been doing on Israel. But Dan, welcome to the show. I want to focus specifically on this Israeli civil war part of the story here, a story that we've never heard before and is not being covered in the mainstream media. Can you unpack this for us?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Clayton. We know about what's happening in the Gaza Strip, this ethnic cleansing, killing of thousands of people. We know about the attack, the October 7th attack on the Israeli kibbutzim and settlements around the Gaza Strip. But what's happening inside Israel is really it's on the brink of a civil war, where you have the Azov battalion, the Azovites of Israel, which are called the Kahanists, followers of a U.S.-born rabbi named Meir Kahana, who was killed in the early 90s. This guy is the ideological father of everything happening in Israel right now, of this kind of Azov-style movement. And they are the national security minister who heads the police has just given them thousands of weapons, and they're basically to act as militias, and then to act that will collaborate with the state forces. The communications minister has just passed legislation to imprison any Israeli citizen who is accused of undermining national morale on the orders of that national security minister. So you have the government can now imprison Israeli citizens simply for the wrong opinion, and then is giving weapons to these extreme right-wing militias. So I actually interviewed the only anti-Zionist Jewish member of the Knesset, Israel's parliament. His name is Ofer Kassif. He is the most hated man in Israel by these Kahanists. So take a listen to what he had to say about what he said is the coming civil war in Israel.
If you don't do something now to stop the fascist militias, what we've seen thus far is nothing comparing to what we are going to see. Israel proper, not the West Bank, not Gaza Strip, Israel proper, the streets of Israel from north to the south are going to be colored in red. A massive rivers of blood are going to be there if you don't stop them. The writing is on the wall, written in blood already. If you don't do something, what you've seen in other civil wars in the recent times, going to be repeated in Israel.
So blood on the streets, I mean, Jew on Jew violence, that's what he's saying. I mean, this is supposed to be the safe haven for Jews, right? That peaceful place where you would never have Jew on Jew violence, but a civil war?
Well, now the mask has been ripped off. Israel has long had this fascist kind of underbelly that doesn't get talked about in the Western media, that just calls it the only democracy in the Middle East. But the same way, you know, we talk about Ukraine's supposed to be since 2014. It's a completely different reality. Israel has this extreme right-wing nationalist movement, some of which are religious, some of which are secular or anywhere in between, that is dead set on ethnically cleansing not only the Gaza Strip, but the West Bank, and then all of Israel itself, of Palestinians. So this is not going to be the Jew on Jew. These militias will target Palestinians. They'll seek to who are Israeli citizens, who are residents, permanent residents of Jerusalem, and then who live under occupation in the West Bank. They want to get rid of all of them. And they also will target left-wing Jews who are anti-Zionists or critical of the state. Just an example, there was an Israeli teacher in the city of Tiberias today who liked an Instagram post from an account called Eye on Palestine, and she was promptly fired, and she might be criminally prosecuted. And if you look at the tweet on, put it up, the tweet from Khan News, the Israeli news outlet, the responses from the Israeli public are: deport her to Gaza, strip her of her citizenship, kill her, you know, death to this woman. That is what's pulsing through Israeli society right now. Telegram channel, an Israeli Telegram channel with 80,000 some followers, where all they do is the most grotesque photos of dead people in Gaza. And it gets hundreds of laughs, and then they put jokes and laugh about it. I mean, this is like the Nazi-esque ideology that Zionism really is and is coming out so much. And so you can imagine that the only thing that Zionists hate more than Palestinians are Jews who don't abide, who don't go along with the agenda, with the state of, because Palestinians, as they see, are an easy threat to identify. That's the external enemy. But anti-Zionist Jews or dissident Jews, those are an enemy from within that are harder to identify. It's, you know, the same way that Nazis thought about Jews in Nazi Germany. So, I mean, if you've gone to, you know, I've covered these right-wing, extreme right-wing fascist rallies in Israel in 2014 during the 51-day war. And, you know, they chant, Gaza is a graveyard. There's no more school, and there's no school in Gaza because all the children are dead. And then these small counter protests of like Israeli leftists will get beaten. People get beaten in the streets. That was 9 years ago. Things have significantly shifted, as reality has become more severe with this Hamas attack on October 7th that has just totally created a frenzy in Israel. And on top of that, the propaganda from the Israeli government, from Benjamin Netanyahu, about 40 beheaded babies, everything, you know, all of this stuff happened around Gaza. That Hamas attack was bad enough, but there were civilians killed. But the Israeli government intentionally lied to the Israeli public and the Western audiences with the connivance of the Western media in order to generate bloodlust for Palestinians to carry out this ethnic cleansing in Gaza, but also to generate this bloodlust in the Israeli public to go after Palestinians inside their country and also against any dissident Jews. So, I mean, I think this could quickly turn into a Ukraine-like scenario where Gaza is essentially like the Donbass was in 2000. It's not a perfect one-to-one parallel, but that's the area being attacked by the government, ethnically cleansed. And then inside, there's a hunt for anyone, accused of sympathies to the enemy. And now these, you know, these Kahanist militias armed by the state.
Unbelievable. Well, we'll be watching it very closely. Dan Cohen, who's doing a great job, and I should suggest all of you check out his channel, Uncaptured Media, and working on really great documentary evidence of what's been happening there, and certainly a long history of spending a lot of time in that region and covering it deeply. Dan, great to see you. Thank you so much for this.
Always good to be here. Thank you, Clayton.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. And we just got word, Iran warning of a preemptive action against Israel. Of course, they're redoubling down on that. We heard that over the past 72 hours, that if Israel does move into Gaza, that Iran's saying that they are going to double down and preemptively attack. The United States, of course, moving in that direction on perhaps a preemptive attack. Like, this is how this is happening right now in Washington. All the while, President Biden...
That word means nothing.
Preemptive.
You attack or you don't.
Yeah.
No.
President Biden heading there tomorrow. So President Biden will be in Israel tomorrow. Anthony Blinken there right now. And, of course, sources saying that there's nothing's going to happen until after President Biden's visit. Like, they're not going to launch a massive invasion into Gaza while President Biden is in town. We'll see if cooler heads can prevail or if this is the staging ground, because the head of CENTCOM is there already laying the groundwork for whatever you guys need. We're there. War, you want war? The United States, we love being in multiple wars at one time. Janet Yellen said we can handle it. $33 trillion in debt. Americans struggling. That's okay. We'll send $10 billion to Israel. We'll send $100 billion to Ukraine. Whatever you want, we got it.
Yeah.
Not for the American people, though. Let us know your thoughts on this. We got more news coming up here on your Tuesday. Pfizer going bankrupt? Oh my God, get out your tissues. Do you guys have tissues? Get out your tissues right now, because you might shed a tear about this story over Pfizer. Wait until you hear how this could affect their bottom line with what's going on with these COVID booster shots right now. Also, Justin Trudeau, what's going on with him in Canada? We'll talk about that as the censorship bill moves forward. And the Polish elections. We're covering a lot of different stories tonight on the show, so thank you guys so much for subscribing to the channel. It's totally free to subscribe, whether you're on Rumble or YouTube. We've got those stories coming up here in a second. But first, let's talk about something is truly close to my heart, which is family and financial intelligence and financial security. And this is something I've been, Natalie and I've been working on for 15, 20 years, educating people about the power of financial intelligence and protecting your family, making sure that your money is not tied to what these governments are doing. in investing very intelligently in hard assets, investing in companies, of course, that are using commodities, pulling minerals out of the ground, being very, very smart with your money. The last few years, of course, have been filled with many uncontrollable and unpredictable events, a pandemic, inflation, wars, political turmoil, and more. And that makes safeguarding our loved ones and taking control of our financial future even more crucial. When it comes to investing, I trust our friends over at Moomoo, the Silicon Valley-based online trading platform. It's my favorite app for trading stocks, ETFs, options. There's no commissions, no account minimums, no hidden fees, and they offer a plethora of great features to help you make your great investment decisions, regardless of the size of your portfolio. Moomoo provides comprehensive research tools covering analyst ratings, financial and operating data, earnings calls, and institutional trackers for every publicly traded company. They also offer tons of learning resources. Up-to-date market news, analyst expectations, all right inside of their app. And if you sign up right now, you can get 16 free stocks, including a full share of Tesla or Google. All you need to do is download the app using my link, which is redacted.inc/moomoo, and you'll keep your funds at the level in your account for at least 60 days. And you get to enjoy your free stocks. That's right. The offer ends soon, so make sure you get started today. Get a free stock. Even if you do nothing else with the account, you get these shares. You could sell the stocks eventually and just have all that extra money and then sell it off and then put it back in your bank account. Again, you don't have to do anything with the account if you don't want to. But it's a big thank you from Moomoo just for signing up and opening your account. It's a big thank you for Moomoo for supporting our channel as well. They're fantastic. Again, 16 free stocks. All you need to do to get it is go to redacted.inc/Moomoo, download the app, make your initial deposits, and then keep your money in that account for 60 days, and you'll get a share of either Tesla or Google, a full share, not one of those like fractional shares where they give you like $2 worth of it. No, no, a full share of Tesla or Google, which is really fantastic. So our thanks to Moomoo for supporting the show. Thank you so much for them.
All right. Well, could Pfizer be heading for bankruptcy? Is that writing on the wall? Now, you may think, oh, no, they did so well during the pandemic. They have so much immunity. This is not an inevitability. Well, let's take a look further at what's been happening with Pfizer, because, yes, it sounds dramatic. But look at the company's financials. Pfizer just announced that they will have to conduct layoffs next year.
What?
In 2024 and cut more than $3 billion in costs. Now, Pfizer is estimating this year their annual profit will be somewhere between $58 and $61 billion. Now, previous forecasts were between $67 and $70 billion. So that is, by many order of magnitudes, smaller than they intended. Now, you may say, well, I don't feel sorry for anybody with $60 billion, but consider that last year Pfizer made over $100 billion, mostly due to the COVID vaccine and the government's purchase of Paxlovid as a treatment for COVID. Now, let's take a look at Pfizer's stock for the last 5 years. So let's say that the pandemic and the vaccine rollout happened at this first major dip. Do you see that in 2020? Big dip in Pfizer stock. And then, oh, look, there's a vaccine and it goes up and up and up, right? But look at where we are now. We're almost to pre-pandemic levels with Pfizer stock price. But Pfizer is the media darling that saved us from the pandemic, if you were to believe the media, right? Pfizer ended the pandemic. How could they be in trouble? Well, here is Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla just this week responding to this revenue drop in a revenue call. He said, "We are in the middle of the COVID fatigue." The COVID fatigue. Nobody wants to speak about COVID. Correct. He says,
how can they come up with a new name for it? This is right. They're going to come up with a new name, a new branding, right?
Yes. He says, we have the big anti-vaccination rhetoric. Okay. I mean, you know, if a company has really good customer retention, right, you don't have that kind of backlash. If you delivered a product that people trusted you and believed in, maybe we wouldn't have the big COVID fatigue.
Maybe they shouldn't have paid out such big bonuses to the executives. Like, they could have put that in savings or something.
Yes, yeah. True. That's a good
Since
point.
Since it was 100% profit, because we funded all the research.
Yeah. Or all of the extra billions they got from, like, the European Union, right, that just funneled all this extra cash to these guys. Couldn't they have put that, like, in a rainy day fund? a bankruptcy fund.
Surely.
I saw someone in the chat just said they want to burn the paperwork. Someone on our Rumble chat just said that's what they want.
Oh, yes, they do.
They want to burn all the paperwork in a bankruptcy filing.
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, a bankruptcy filing.
Wouldn't that exactly do that? It would enable you to get off the hook from...
Well, they could maybe declare bankruptcy from some litigation.
Right.
Possibly.
Right. Especially if in discovery. Exactly.
Right. But that so doesn't mean that you can destroy.
It's a metaphorical. It's a metaphorical protection. Right?
Right. But we saw Johnson & Johnson was able to take certain IP and move it to a different LLC when they were sued over, I think it was
baby powder.
And baby powder. Right.
They were like, they basically spun off their baby powder division so that could get sued and file bankruptcy. And then they kept their other stuff.
Right. And so they only had one division that got sued into oblivion and the rest. And then they were just fine. So this is absolutely something that Pfizer could do.
Could you imagine if we did something like that, like, hey, the government's going to come in and take your money. I'm just going to start another bank account and hide it over there. We'd be jailed.
You can do that if you're Pfizer. You can do that if they're right. One of these big companies.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, in August, before the vaccine rollout for this most recent booster, which was not clinical trial at all, we covered this recently. You should look at the documents yourself. The FDA approved the new COVID vaccine based on models from the original COVID vaccine, just modeling. That's it. Estimation. They did not look at any tests of the one that is being given right now. No clinical trials. Watch that segment back if you don't believe me. Anyway, I digress. In August, Borla said that Pfizer was hoping for 25% of the U.S. population to get the COVID booster. Now, that may seem pretty reasonable considering that about 80% of the American population took the original COVID vaccine. So if you think about attrition, 25%. Okay, that's probably doable, right? How'd they come up with that? Well, they thought 50% of the American population takes the flu vaccine. And it's kind of, can we catch them when they come in for their COVID vaccine? Watch how he says this. He says, if 50% get a flu shot, can we get 50% of that 50%? And then we've got 25%, and then we're doing okay. Watch.
But right now we know that in most likely, starting from September, and all the end to the vaccination season, 50% of Americans will go to get the flu vaccine.
Right.
The question is how many of them will get also a COVID vaccine. If half of them get a COVID vaccine, the projections likely will be a little bit higher than what we predicted.
Okay.
But if 5% of them get vaccine, clearly the projections will be lower.
Okay.
Whatever will be though, this year, I think, is a very safe predictor of what will be the years to come.
Right.
Oh.
Okay, they're not getting anywhere near 25%. Right now, the CDC is estimating that about 2% of the American population has got the most recent COVID
2%,
booster. 2%,
yeah.
2%.
And I think we're winning, don't you? I mean, like, I think getting this message out about this stuff, like...
Well, I mean, I don't like that term, winning, as if we have an agenda. If the vaccine were awesome...
Well, I have an agenda. It's education.
Right.
So... You know, when we educate people and they make a decision that's not propaganda and not mainstream media propaganda, being shills for the CDC, taking U.S. taxpayer dollars and putting it on television and telling you what to go do with your body. So I do have an agenda when it comes to that. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, like, just listen to the way these companies talk. It's like there's no worry about people actually getting the flu or actually getting COVID. It's all about we need this percentage of people to get these shots. So we got to do marketing campaigns to get these needles in people's arms. Otherwise, we might go bankrupt. But it's not like because we care that the flu goes away or we care that you don't get COVID. It's so that we can make profits.
Right. Bottom line, profits. Yes. Right. Money, money, money.
But still, you know, saying that like we are fighting against Pfizer, we're not. We're just presenting you information that shows that Pfizer has not given it to us straight. They did not properly clinically test any of the COVID vaccines. They lied to us about which one they were giving, and they overestimated the effectiveness of that vaccine. Now, you may say, oh, but, you know, the vaccine saved lives. We've discussed this. That data doesn't exist. I've looked for it. The data that the CDC uses as a metric of success for post-vaccination is only that people who were vaccinated were less likely to go on ventilators. That's it. They can't prove a reduction in deaths. They cannot prove a reduction in transmission. We've looked for that data. It doesn't exist. So now when we're looking at Pfizer only being able to give this booster to 2% of the population, 2% of the population is not getting the Pfizer vaccine because they have to share that 2% with Moderna and Novavax. So they can't even guarantee a 1% share of people getting the COVID vaccine. So, okay, but do we feel sorry about that, that they're not able to sell it? Not really, because the American taxpayer is still buying it, given that it was put in the vaccine schedule. They're still making money. They're just not making as much because not as much order. Same thing with Paxlovid. That's just not being ordered. But is it just that sales are down, or is there more trouble for Pfizer? Well, recently, British Member of Parliament Andrew Bridgen sent a letter to Prime Minister Rishi Sunak letting him know that he had evidence that Pfizer did not deliver the vaccine that they delivered clinical trial information about. In fact, he says that Pfizer originally rolled out the vaccine in 2020, showed the FDA clinical trial data, and then delivered a different vaccine. This is something that, if you watch John Campbell's YouTube channel, he talked about how when he realized that he had been analyzing all of this vaccine trial data for his channel and giving his audience an assessment of that vaccine data, and then realizing that he sort of sent them out to get a different vaccine because he thought that those that data was promising, he was really upset about the fact that, like, I was telling somebody something that was wrong and I didn't know it. Watch what MP Andrew Bridgen says about this.
On the 7th of August this year, I wrote to Prime Minister Rishi Sunak with evidence that I'd received from Dr. Josh Gutchko of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, which indicated that Pfizer had been enabled by the MHRA, the Medicines and Healthcare Product Regulatory Agency in the UK, to carry out a bait-and-switch operation with their vaccine, which meant that the Pfizer vaccine that was tested on 22,000 individuals with 22,000 in a placebo group was not the same vaccine that was rolled out in the UK and around the world. The compelling evidence for this is the fact that on the second day of mass vaccination in the UK, the MHRA changed the guidelines, told people they had to stay at the vaccination centre for 15 minutes after vaccination. The reason for this remaining at the vaccination centre was the risk of anaphylactic shock. The MHRA hadn't expected anaphylactic shock because it wasn't shown in the Pfizer trials. You only get anaphylactic shock when there are endotoxins in the vaccines. You only get endotoxins in the vaccines when they've been cultured up in bacteria such as Escherichia coli. That demonstrated that the vaccine that was rolled out around the world was not manufactured in the same way or to the same standards as that vaccine that they'd got medical approval for. That means that nobody could have given informed consent. They were told that the vaccines were safe, effective, and tested, and what they were taking was a completely untested vaccine from Pfizer. I'm still waiting for the Prime Minister to respond to the 44 pages of evidence I supplied on this matter, which is of crucial importance to the health and well-being of our nation.
All right, well, he's going to keep waiting because nobody seems to really be interested in that right now. We are. I'm glad you are. You're here with me. But Pfizer has immunity, right? That's what sort of most of us have been throwing our hands up like, well, they can't be punished for that. That has sort of been the big story, that no matter what happens, Pfizer was given rock solid immunity by most governments. But maybe not, because some people online are starting to talk about how the PrEP Act that the government put in place to protect the vaccine makers will not hold if Pfizer is found guilty of fraud. Well, how do we know that the FDA perhaps how do we know that Big Pharma can be held liable if they are found guilty of fraud? We know because that's what happened to Purdue Pharma when they tested OxyContin and were sued into oblivion for causing the opioid epidemic. Now, here is something I've shown you this before, but I think it's worth looking at again, at just how much the FDA is in bed with Big Pharma. Because from research from the book Dope Sick, which then later became miniseries with I think Hulu it's a Hulu show yeah. with Michael Keaton. I believe, but it's a fantastic book, worth reading. But she tells the story that it came to light in the last 10 years that FDA regulators and big pharma executives have been quietly holding private meetings at expensive hotels at least annually since 2002 through a drug industry funded nonprofit. This came from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Now, the meeting led to the development of enriched enrollment, an aptly named practice that allowed drug companies to weed out people from their studies who didn't respond well to their drugs, therefore tipping the balance towards FDA approval of new drugs and away from science. So Purdue and others were caught working with the FDA to manipulate their trials so that their drugs could pass. Now, I think what's interesting about this and what I think about a lot is that when you talk to someone who is all in on the COVID vaccine and really wants to believe that that was a great thing to have done, the COVID vaccine, and you say, well, there was a lot of unethical practices around the development and delivery around that vaccine. They say, oh, no, that's not true. Not true at all. And then you ask them, well, do you believe that the drug companies and the FDA started the opioid crisis with unethical practice? Yes, they most people believe that. They believe that opioids were a scam, that it was created to addict people for profit. So I don't understand why it's relatively accepted that biopharmaceutical complex created the opioid crisis, but then we cannot question the COVID pandemic. Have you seen those two narratives, and does that cause you any pause like it does to me? Now, it's worth noting here that the big pharma is not acting alone. The FDA is allowing this. So even if Pfizer is held to account for delivering a different vaccine, for not giving us the full weight of the clinical trials, for perhaps manipulating the clinical trials by removing people like through this, enriched enrollment. Even if that's the case and Pfizer goes down, the FDA doesn't go down with them, right? So we're stuck with these same practices unless we make demands for better clinical trials, more ethical practices of drug companies, and a better FDA, basically. Because given that Purdue was sued into bankruptcy because of malpractice, while the FDA got off scot-free, could that be predictive for Pfizer? Now, I have a lot more to say about this, but I'll just wrap it up with this because I did just finish the book, Turtles All the Way Down, about vaccine science and myths. That book will blow your mind. It will blow your mind about just how much of a sham is presented to us when it comes time for vaccine and pharmaceutical trials. They do not give us the full story. I know you're shocked, but there are things that we can do, because even if the rug is pulled out from under Pfizer or Moderna or Novavax or Johnson & Johnson, we still will be stuck with the same system. So what we should do, this is just what I've been thinking about based on reading this book and based on looking at this style, is that we absolutely should demand, here, I made a list. These are some of the things we can do, even if Pfizer goes down. Demand the requirement for true placebo trials of all new pharmaceuticals and demand that that be law. Demand standardized clinical trial parameters so that you cannot throw out people who respond negatively to the drugs. Eliminate emergency use authorization. Require mandatory adverse events reporting, such as the VAERS. For right now, only pharmaceutical companies have to report adverse events, not hospitals, not doctors, even though they do have to report infectious diseases. This should be standardized reporting so that we can take care of people who get hurt. We absolutely should demand extensive research of the current vaccine schedule for children. And we should repeal vaccine requirements for non-herd immunity-inducing vaccines. For instance, tetanus doesn't offer herd immunity. It makes no difference if I'm vaccinated for tetanus and Clayton is not. That's not a herd immunity, because that vaccine only stops your body from responding to tetanus. It's not an infectious disease. So there should not be requirements for things that do not induce herd immunity. So that's a short list. We're going to keep going over this because I'm on fire about this book. Let us know what you think about whether or not Pfizer could actually be held, what's the expression, have their feet held to the fire through this information.
We should also mention that this Turtles All the Way Down book, that's the book club book, your book club book. This is for specifically for community members only. If you're a Redacted Rebel Plus member in the Redacted. Yeah, if you're a Redacted Plus member, the book club is starting very, very soon. So hopefully all of you guys have been reading the book. Participate in the book club with Natalie. That starts if you go to redacted.inc, you can sign up and join the Redacted Rebel community. It's a plus club. And just for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism. You can support what we do here. You get access to the live streams, plus the book club, plus Redacted conversations and other videos that no one else gets to see, and early access to some of these conversations before they're published anywhere else. So again, the book club is a part of our VIP community. We should mention that. So yeah, this Turtles All the Way Down book, every like 20 minutes as she was reading this book, she's like, oh my God, can you believe this? And we're sitting there over breakfast, like looking at charts and graphs, and you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Some of the things that you learn about polio in this book are just shocking.
The polio chapter alone is like a murder mystery. I can't say enough good things. I mean, it's an awful story, but I can't say enough about this reporting. It's amazing, you guys.
Crazy.
Amazing.
We've got more news to get to here on your, what is today, Tuesday? Taco Tuesday. Someone in the chat, I thought this was funny. Where did it go? It disappeared. Oh, Danny Meskey says, how come, we were talking about being sick and stuff, and Danny Meskey says, how come Morris, my name's Clayton, how come Morris and Natalie... my name's Clayton. How come Morris and Natalie, the family, are sick a lot? Well, first of all, we have three kids. We have three little kids. If you know anything about children, they tend to go to school and they tend to touch a lot of things that other children touch. And they end up bringing those things home to mom and dad.
They're known as carrier monkeys.
Right, exactly. So, anyway, last week when we got really sick with the stomach thing, my 11-year-old daughter... got really sick, and then we were all like, oh, we're all going to catch it. And then within like 4 days, it was like spread through the entire family.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't get any more sick than normal people do, I think.
I don't know. I'm not answering for that. That's like, how do you answer that question?
I think because like when the show's not here and then we're sick, or one of us is sick and we're not, you know, it's like, then it's very vivid. But I think most people get, you know, cold or sniffles and get a stomach bug and... I don't know. Just thought I'd...
I don't know you an answer.
Just thought I'd tell.
I get sick.
I gave Danny an answer.
Okay.
I think it's just because people's favorite rock stars never take breaks. You know what I mean? They just go.
That's right.
It doesn't matter.
Like Adele.
You guys care about me.
I'm like Mariah Carey. I need to be rested for exhaustion because of all the books that I'm reading.
Yeah. The tough life that you have.
I'm more like Daniel Radcliffe. Like, you don't ever see me. And if you do, I'm probably wearing the same thing every time.
Okay. Yeah. That's Philip. The voice of Philip, you never see him. And he could actually, Philip could be sick all the time. He could just play an audio clip and we wouldn't know. He could play like the same, you know, erudite comments and we'd be like, great point, Philip, even though he clipped it from like 3 weeks ago. He just like recorded himself and then it's like played in the show.
Yeah.
We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about Justin Trudeau. We're going to look at what's happening in Canada, because all of that unity, the million person march that was scheduled for the next few days, guess what's happening to that now? What's happening in Israel? This is perfect for the Justin Trudeau government. This is perfect cover for all of their failures and their pushing of the woke ideology and agenda in Canada. So we'll look there. We're also going to look at Poland and the results of the Polish election, and how long will this unity government stand? Is it set up for success? Is it going to be a failure? Will they align more with NATO, more with the European Union for over their woke policies? We're going to look more deeply at Poland. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Bambi, because when you're running a business, your employees can create all kinds of interesting situations. If you work in human resources, interesting may be a mild word for that, like getting complaints because someone on the team always smells horrible. Maybe someone brings food that you don't like the smell of that food. Maybe, you know, in this day and age, It's almost like you don't want your employees talking at all because of how easy it is to say the wrong thing. Well, maybe someone isn't showing up when they're supposed to. Well, with Bambi, you can get access to your own dedicated HR manager starting at just $99 a month. They're available by phone, email, and real-time chat, so onboarding and terminations run smoothly. Team members reach peak performance, and your business stays compliant with changing human resources regulations. Seriously, if you have a small business and you think, well, you know, should I just do human resources myself? No, you shouldn't. It's too litigious and too hard of a time right now out there. You should get an expert to help you. And, you know, why not get somebody who can be on call to help you all the time, and someone you don't have to hire in-house. That's, you know, a cost saver as well. So schedule your free conversation today to see how much Bambi can take off your plate. Go to Bambi, that's BAMBEE.com right now, and type in redacted under the podcast area when you sign up. It really helps the show. It helps let them know where you found them. Again, that's Bambi, BAMBEE, Bravo Alpha Mike Bravo Echo Echo, right? That's what it is. .com, Bambi.com. Type in redacted under podcast. We thank them so much for their support of our show.
Well, one of the biggest threats to Justin Trudeau over the past few months has been the unity that we were seeing among Canadians, coming together of all religious stripes, saying down with these woke politics of the Justin Trudeau government, the dictatorial censorship, the woke policies pushing gender ideology in schools, all of it. Canada has been transformed by the Trudeau government. But where has Justin Trudeau been over the past few days? Is the turmoil in the Middle East maybe perfect cover for these woke policies to resurface in Canada? David Craden is a journalist, writes at the Post Millennial. He also has a YouTube channel, Craden's Right. Been following the Trudeau government. And David, I just want to get your take on this. Over the past few days, it seems the turmoil in the Middle East, Trudeau has been relatively quiet, though he did come out yesterday and start talking about how this affects all Canadians. So what do you make of how this is going to affect Canada now with a lot of the pushback that we were seeing against Trudeau over the past few months?
Well, this couldn't have come at a more opportune moment for Justin Trudeau, because he had seen forces that he had never imagined aligning against him. We had Muslim Canadians, Jewish Canadians, Christian Canadians, people of all faiths saying enough of his woke ideology. They specifically were coming out against gender ideology in the schools. We had 1.5 million people participating in a march on September 20th. So what happened? We have a major distraction now. Now, up until now, every time Trudeau wants to distract from domestic policies, he invites Zelensky to come to Canada, or he goes to Ukraine and has a love-in with Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, and he dispenses with another $500 million or another $1 billion. And that's how Trudeau has been distracting Canadians. Now he has the war in the Mideast. And if you dare to question that as being the worst priority of this country, he will be branding you and demonizing you, perhaps as a terrorist, perhaps as a hateful person. He's already done that. He's already branded parents who think they should have a right to raise their children as hateful. Now, this is an open field. And I think you would agree that this war is an excellent distraction for woke leaders. I use that in quotation marks.
Well, we see this in the United States, right? We have a southern border invasion in the United States. Tens of thousands of illegal immigrants pouring across the southern border, and yet we're sending $10 billion now, additional billion dollars to Israel to protect Israel. That's where this money is going, on top of the hundreds of billions that we've sent to Ukraine. So I've said it multiple times. We are being played. We are being totally fooled, and it's happening right before our eyes, and Canada is no different. He spoke yesterday in Parliament. He spoke at first in French. What I saw is in French, so I don't understand French, but he was specifically focusing on the Middle East. This was the main point of his conversation there yesterday, right?
Well, exactly. He didn't show up for question period yesterday, which is normal for him lately. He rarely shows up for question period. He had the deputy prime minister, Chrystia Freeland. She's the one with the Nazi connections in the family, by the way, spouting off about Israel, which is totally ironic. But Trudeau now is completely focused on Israel and the war in the Mideast. Of course, he has to be, because he has a seat in Montreal. And if he doesn't look very concerned with Israel, there's a large Jewish community in his backyard that will hold him accountable. So there's a political, very raw political advantage for this in Trudeau. But the larger scheme here is that he can use this to say, let's not talk about gender ideology in the schools. Let's not talk about the euthanasia program I have running that's going to include the mentally ill in the very near future, and that includes people who just feel depressed right now. Or how about abortion on demand up to the last minute? How about the other policies that are killing Canada, like the anti-free speech policies, his censorship policies, which he's about to push through the third part of? So this is an excellent opportunity for Justin Trudeau to say, let's just talk about Israel. And in fact, if you watched Question Period yesterday, every time a question arose about the next budget, about Canada's fiscal catastrophe, the answer was, well, you know, we should be looking at Israel, because this is the first time we've sat down since the invasion. They are off for a week. Let's just talk about Israel today, because that's the only thing that matters.
Well, that's like what Janet Yellen just said, the Treasury Secretary of the United States. We can fight these two wars, even though we can't afford it. We're wildly, wildly in debt, massively in debt, $33 trillion. Canada, Justin Trudeau's government, has massively expanded the money supply in Canada, devaluing the currency by all accounts and runaway inflation. And of course, this is what the opposition is really targeting in Canada, that we're going to restrict that spending, actually have a balanced budget, get the spending back and reined in and under control. I guess what I'm concerned about specifically for Canadians, of course, are the things that are currently moving through Parliament that Trudeau has been pushing for, hoping that you won't talk about, hoping you won't shine a light on, censorship, etc. So what current things, you mentioned the censorship bill, what current things are right now being voted on, about to be pushed through, that they can use Israel as a distraction to push through and clamp down on? By the way, this is not a conspiracy theory. I mean, this is exactly what happened after 9/11. You take away people's freedoms, and you do it under the auspices of, you know, of Middle East turmoil right now, or protection of Israel. This is a way to protect all Canadians. We're going to take away your civil liberties.
Yeah, well, and the first thing, the most important thing that's happened as a result of this war in the Mideast is the cancellation of the second million person march this Saturday. I just discovered this morning from the organizer who I talked to early this morning, he has decided to cancel this march because there is so much division amongst his organizers, amongst the participants. He's concerned it will break down into violence, that it could become disordered because of all of the disagreement over the Mideast. People are focused on the wrong things. They're not focused on domestic policy. They're focused on things they cannot control, such as Israeli policy and in Mideast policy. But what is Trudeau poised to pass? And this is what people are missing, is because, yes, he has a lot of very evil policies that are already in effect, such as euthanasia, and such as the gender ideology, which is seeped in through all the school systems throughout Canada. But he is poised to pass phase three of his internet censorship bill. And I can't overemphasize how dangerous this is. The bill will be coming up in this fall session. And if it's not defeated, in Canada, like Great Britain, we will have an online safety bill that makes disinformation illegal. They will begin arresting journalists for producing news that the government disagrees with, because the bill will not define what disinformation is. So it will mean whatever the government decides it is. And that could be anything contrary to Justin Trudeau or his government. And that's the danger here, is while we're focused on Israel, while we're focused on, my God, what is becoming World War III, with that and Ukraine, we're going to have domestic policies that are totally, totally undermining freedom in Canada.
Well, as a famous Democrat once said, never let a good crisis go to waste, right? And that's exactly what you're seeing unfolding before us right now. And that's why we're trying to shine a light on it on our show, because we're all being played. We are all being played. And all of these things are happening behind the scenes that we don't get to see. And they are going to take away our civil liberties. They are going to continue to push these things on us. And they're going to do it quietly under the auspices of protection. We're doing it to protect you.
If I can just say one thing, when I first learned about this Hamas invasion of Israel, my first concern was, my God, we don't need another war in the Middle East. My second concern was, what's going to happen to the religious unity we have in Canada and to some extent was developing in the United States and other European countries? What's going to happen to that? It's going to be totally smothered by this war. And my God, we are creeping ever closer to a nuclear catastrophe.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. It's not hyperbole at all. In fact, we saw, and just on the Canadian side of this, we saw Muslims who were the most outspoken, of course, against this gender ideology in schools. Keep your hands off our children in schools, right? Keep your hands off our children. And that was a rallying cry, right? To come together around children. Keep this away from us. Christians finally were standing up and saying, yes, okay, you know what, Muslims, you were out there really first speaking about this. We're standing side by side with you. We're coming together. Jews, we're standing side by side with you. We're all coming together. We can stand against this. Now they cancel this million-person march, the second one of these, because of this. So this is just the tip of the iceberg for what we're about to see. David Creighton in Canada, thank you so much for your perspective up there. We really, really appreciate it, as always.
Thank you, Clayton. I'm so glad that you're back in good health.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much, David. And another person concerned about our health, but
yeah,
we're fine.
That's nice.
Just a little stomach, but we're good. We're back. We've got more news to get to
you guys
here.
Feeling okay?
We're feeling okay.
I threw my back out. If you really want to, if you want to talk about my health, I mean, I don't, but I'm a little stiff.
Just walking around like a cane today, basically. But we're good. We're all good. Thank you, guys. There's more important people in the world that are struggling right now besides us. Absolutely the case. There are Polish elections, of course, that have just wrapped up. We're going to cover the very latest on that. Will Poland move more closely to the woke ideologies and agendas of the European Union or further away from that now that these elections have wrapped up? How long will this coalition government last that needs to be set up? We'll talk about that with Mike Krupa from Warsaw, Poland in just moments. But first, right now we've seen gold prices, of course, spiking. So gold, silver, everything going up right now as these world governments are gobbling up as much precious minerals as they can because the demand is off the charts. We, in fact, even just got word that the United States government owns how many Bitcoin? They're just like stocking up on Bitcoin, too.
Yes.
Not only gold and silver and Bitcoin. And so these world governments right now, these treasuries, these central banks.
200,000.
Yeah. 200,000 Bitcoin.
That's about $5 billion.
On top of all of the gold that, of course, China has been acquiring, Vladimir Putin has been acquiring in Russia, and all eyes on what happens with gold next. This is why we're such big gold bugs here on the show, and so important for you to at least have a portion of your savings, even if it's just like a rainy day fund, you keep like a few hundred or a thousand or whatever on hand to protect your family. That is losing value every day as the U.S. dollar continues to lose value under inflation. So a dollar today is worth less tomorrow. That's just the way that works. $1,000 in your bank account with U.S. currency is worth less next year thanks to inflation. It's simple math, and anyone can do it. That's how it works. The same thing, the size of a Happy Meal at McDonald's doesn't change. It's the same size. The price just goes skyrockets. But gold is a store of value, is a physical asset that has sustained for 5,000 years, and so has silver. We're huge silver fans here as well because, well, the price of it is relatively cheap, comparatively speaking. And silver is, of course, not only money, currency, but it's also a commodity. And it's used in just about everything as they move towards this green and solar revolution, of course, silver and everything. So anyway, our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up right now with your own free gold and silver investor guide to see if it's something that will fit for your family. Call them at 1-800-613-3557 or go to learredacted.com. That's the website. We have links in the description below, too, if you need to check them out there. And you can receive right now up to $15,000 in free bonus medals with a qualified purchase. That's right, $15,000 in free bonus medals with a qualified purchase. Call them today and just have a conversation with them to see, you know, how they can help you get set up. You can also get your free gold investors and silver guide just by calling their 800 number, 1-800-613-3557, or go to learredacted.com. Well, now to the election in Poland. The votes are in. We now know the results. So will Poland dramatically change? Are we going to see a major shift? Perhaps a huge move away from NATO support, a dramatic change in Poland, or more of the same? Mike Krupa is a journalist in Warsaw, Poland. Fantastic friend of the show. We're glad to have Mike back. He's the host of Votum TV there in Poland. Mike, so any big surprises for you or sort of more of the same from what we saw? Can you walk us through what exactly happened?
Well, hello, Clayton. Hello, everyone, once again. It wasn't a surprise for me. I predicted from some time now that, you know, Law and Justice, the ruling party thus far, would win the elections, but they wouldn't get a majority. So the fundamental question everybody was asking, even, you know, last week was with whom Law and Justice is going to have to form a coalition. Now, most of the observers and analysts were saying that they would most likely form a coalition with the party that is to the right of them. That is a Confederation Party. I spoke about it a few times on your show. However, it turns out that while expectations were very high for Confederation, some were even estimating back in the spring that they would get about 15% of the vote. It turns out they got just over 7% of the vote, which gives them about 18 MPs right now in the current parliament instead of the projected originally, 50 to 60 MPs. So that's a big blow to Confederation. In order to have a majority in the Polish parliament, you have to have 231 MPs. Peace does not have, Law and Justice does not have that on its own. So what's going to happen now is the three next parties, which are the three main opposition parties, which is the Civic Platform, led by Donald Tusk. Then we have the so-called Third Way, which is basically a sort of conglomerate of these liberal lights and the so-called peasant party, so basically a party of farmers, and the hard left, the woke left party, which is called the left party basically in Poland. They will most likely be forming a coalition, and they will most likely be governing with Tusk as head of government, as prime minister. So no big surprises for me. The only, I guess, surprise for me was I actually did expect Confederation to come out slightly higher. I thought they would get about 9% of the vote. They got just over 7, as I said. So yeah, that's a loss for Law and Justice. It's a loss for Confederation, generally for the right wing in Poland. And we are expected to have a left liberal, very pro-woke and very pro-EU coalition coming up.
Were you surprised by that? I mean, it seemed like from the outside, maybe there was enormous pushback from sort of woke politics, this alignment with the European Union on a number of different issues, the alignment with NATO, of course, the war in Ukraine. This is seems striking here.
The problem with the new coalition is that they are just as pro-Ukraine and pro-NATO as Law and Justice, except Law and Justice was a little bit too fanatical. So the current coalition will be slightly less fanatical, but in terms of the general course of the sort of Atlanticist institutions, NATO and the European Union, they're going to toe the line. Except the only thing that might change is they're not going to be asking, you know, for a fight with Russia maybe as much as Law and Justice did. As a matter of fact, just before we came on, I was actually looking at the government record from the previous prime ministership of Donald Tusk, which was in the years 2007, about 2015. And Tusk, on many occasions, actually articulated a rational policy towards Russia, at least not a policy of let's be the first ones, let's not be the tip of the spear in fighting Russia, which the Law and Justice government obviously was not. They were asking for a fight, basically. And the only reason why in the last couple of weeks they changed their tune regarding Ukraine, especially when it comes to the import of Ukrainian grain and issues pertaining to Ukrainian immigrants, was because they saw that Confederation, which is the party to the right of them, was actually gaining on this issue, talking about the refugee flow and talking about, you know, sending all our military equipment to Ukraine and losing the war in essence. So there was a lot of people that were fed up. Obviously, the turnout, which is interesting, was over 70%. So that's a record after 1989 for Poland. But I think a lot of people were just fed up with two terms of the law and justice government, because at some point they really became, enamored with power, and they just didn't care what anybody said about them. They thought they were really going to govern for a third term, and that just made them very arrogant. And a lot of people maybe didn't look so much at the policy specifics as just get them the hell out of there, and we want to see new faces in government. And I think a lot of it was based basically on emotion and not on sound, rational policy analysis.
What do you think this means for the Ukrainian refugees in Poland? Any change there on that policy? Because what is the current number, too? We had over close to 3 million Ukrainian refugees that were staying there.
The ones that came here and are still here after, the ones that came after February 24, 2022, it's estimated about 2 million. So if you take that 2 million plus the 2 million around that were already here before the war, that's going to create about 4 million. I think with the amount of the ones that aren't declared, the ones that are here illegally, you're probably going closer to about 5 million. So I don't think their status quo will change. Sadly, I think what's going to happen right now is we're going to be seeing this policy push for larger multiculturalism in Poland. And I wouldn't be surprised if in light of this, and you know, within a decade's time, we're going to have a Ukrainian minority party in the Polish parliament. And that's when you're going to know that things are really gone down the drain for Poland. But it's interesting because, you know, peace, the law and justice, we call it peace in Poland, they were officially conservative, even though they had the most liberal immigration policy in all of the EU. During their time, more non-EU people came into the EU, to Poland specifically, than in any other European country. And I'm talking about, obviously, legal immigrants. So despite the rhetoric, the borders were open. The forming coalition is not going to change that, sadly. But I think that will only strengthen the opposition sort of on the streets and possibly give new motivation for anti-immigrationist parties, somewhat like the Confederation, to make new gains in next year's local elections and the elections to the European Union, which are scheduled for June.
Last year, we saw Polish citizens lined up with their cars getting coal from power plants that were not even set up to really hand out coal to individual citizens, like taking your hatchback and just filling up the trunk with chunks of coal to try to drive home with. We now know, of course, what's happening in the Middle East. And of course, the push towards clean energy in Poland. This was a big push on the part of Poland. You know, we could see an energy crisis facing Europe and facing Poland into this winter, given what's happened with the Middle East. So, where do the Polish people sit right now on energy supplies, fossil fuels? Can you talk a little bit about what you guys expect to see there as we head into the colder months?
The problem with the coalition that's coming in right now is they're even more green than the other party that just lost the election. Now, whereas Law and Justice, they pretended to be very, you know, anti-woke in the climate agenda and so on and so on. But in terms of signing all the relevant documents in the European Union pertaining to fighting emissions and all that stuff, they signed everything. But then they came back and said, you know, the European Union forced us. Well, the coalition that's coming in right now, they're not going to say that, because they're going to willingly sign up to everything of the climate agenda that the EU pushes. So, you know, electric cars and all that stuff and phasing out of coal. So it's obviously not going to happen from day to day. And there will be a lot of pushback. But if basically the government that's coming in right now is about as crazy on the climate change issue as the Greens in Germany, especially the left party, which is going to be forming most likely this coalition. So I think they're going to be...
That turned out really well for Germany, by the way.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, as I said, I'm pretty sure that'll generate a lot of pushback. And I think Tusk is even, you know, enough of a realist to know that, yeah, even if you implement these globalist policies, you have to implement them in phases and incrementally, whereas the left is probably going to be pushing very much to implement them quickly. That way you can't, you know, reverse anything once they lose power, which they surely will. As I said, we talked about this before we went on. I think, including the climate agenda and the agenda in foreign policy and the woke agenda that they will surely try to impose on Polish society in the upcoming years and months. I don't think this coalition is going to last too long. I think there's too many differences and too many personal differences between them. So I'm giving them about 18 months, you heard it here for the first time, before this coalition collapses. And we're probably going to have early elections in Poland. But one way or another, I'm giving them 18 months.
Yes. All right, we'll hold you to that. We'll keep a little countdown timer.
18 months before you're going to have a civil war in the coalition, because despite the fact that they're mainly aligned on a lot of issues pertaining to social policy and foreign policy, but because there's so much of the cake to give Iran right now, once you throw out the old elite, that's going to generate a lot of conflict. So who's going to go into, you know, state-owned companies? Who's going to go into state-owned television? Who's going to take over the ministries? You know, once you're dividing a good cake, everybody wants the bigger piece. So I think that, in essence, and not so much policy issues, is going to be generating the conflicts that eventually are going to lead to the, you know, collapse of the coalition.
I'll get you out of here on this, Mike. Over the past few days, since the outbreak of war in Israel, we've, against the 17 factions there on the Palestinian side, you know, everyone wants to paint this just as Hamas, but it's very important to point out this basically 17 different factions there. There's been a lot of memes around on the internet about Poland. As you see London, you see all of these protests, you see France. But there's been a lot of memes floating around about Poland, how you don't see this in Poland. Can you talk about that? Can you address why you would have 2 million Ukrainian refugees, but you don't see the type of perhaps protests and crisis that you're seeing in London and France and other EU countries right now?
Well, I've seen the memes on Twitter. I've seen the ones, you know, oh, look, and this is Poland, no Hamas demonstrations, no Palestine organizations, no pro-Palestine demonstrations. Well, first of all, there was a pro-Palestine demonstration in Krakow. It wasn't as large as the one in London and in other countries, and it wasn't so maybe Muslim up front, but it did take place. They had guys walking around, you know, with the Arafat colors and the Palestinian flag. So there was a demonstration in Krakow, which all those, you know, outlets didn't report on. And the second thing is, you know, okay, we might not have a Muslim problem in Poland, but we sure as hell have a Ukrainian problem in Poland. And the same places that are shown in Krakow right now lacking in Muslim demonstrations or pro-Palestine demonstrations, you know, almost every single day since last year, there was a permanent Ukrainian presence beside the statue of Adam Mickiewicz in Krakow Square. Now, Adam Mickiewicz is obviously a famous Polish poet and playwright. And beside his statue, you basically have this gathering of Ukrainians standing with flags, you know, screaming support Azov, support Ukraine. And that was basically on a permanent basis. So after a while, a couple of Polish people got angry. Patriots started protesting against his football hooligans and so on and so on. So I don't know if it's still there, but the Ukrainians are the ones protesting in Poland and making their presence known. So, you know, when I saw the meme for the first time, they say, oh, look, no Hamas demonstrations in Poland. I'm like, yeah, but you have Azov demonstrations in Poland, which pretty much to me amounts to the same thing. So I don't care. The best thing would be to do not to have one or the other, right? So I think it's basically a meme to sort of, you know, it was, I called Jack Posobiec out on this on Twitter. I said, Jack, stop shilling for peace, you know, for the law and justice government. I mean, they're just as pro-immigrant and pro-open borders just to the east, not to the south, because bringing in Muslims on a huge, you know, number bases like the Ukrainians will still look bad in the media right now in Poland. It might change with time, but Ukrainians, hey, what the hell? At least they're white, right? And they speak a similar language. But they're as detrimental to our culture, if not more, and to our economy as the masses that would come from the south. So, you know, it's just, as I said, it was just poor shilling for the ruling party. And I understand where they're coming from, a lot of these people.
Well, thank you for shining a light on this and telling us the truth here. You know, it's very easy for these memes to travel on the internet very quick, and Jack wants to tweet that kind of stuff, and it makes it seem like that's the truth. But thank you for sharing the actual truth with us here on the show. Mike Rupa, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's been a busy few days with the election there. We appreciate you bringing your insights on what this means for the government going forward. And you heard it here, the Polish government, 18 months. 18 months. That's it. That's all they've got left. We'll see a new government, I guess, in 18 months. Mike, great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one. God willing. Godspeed.
All right, we're going to hold Mike to his 18-month deal to see what happens in the Polish government. Thanks for all of your great comments tonight. Thank you guys for your super chats throughout the show. We really appreciate it. Thanks to all of you who've subscribed for the very first time. Let me know in the chat how many of you are new to the show, how many of you stumbled across us and decided to join us here live for the very first time. If that's you, please let us know. Welcome. Good to see all of you, and please subscribe. We're here live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So very easy to join us here. 4 p.m. Eastern time is when we go live. We start the live stream about 30 minutes before that. So we have a countdown. Everyone can kind of join up and hang out a little bit. But we usually start promptly at 4 p.m. Eastern time, depending on if I've filled up my coffee and water in time before the show. You can support independent media. You can support our show here. Of course, the show is totally free. You don't have to spend a penny to watch us on Rumble or YouTube. It's a totally free show. But we are supported by you and our sponsors. And if you want to join our Plus Club, you can. We give you access to exclusive content, stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else, plus early access to our redacted conversations, our deeper dive interviews, and other content, plus our own live streams that we're starting internally just for Redacted Plus members. Again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism. You can support what we do here. Just go to redacted.inc and just sign up there. And again, it's a recurring membership. You can cancel anytime, but if you'd like to support us for price of a latte or whatever, you can do that once a month and know that that money is being put back right here into this show. That's what we do. We want to keep this show on the air, and thanks to you, we can do that. So thank you guys so much. We'll be back here at 4 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow with a whole new show. Until then, have a great night, everyone.